Blog Talk Radio.
We don't have audio from Phil, I guess. Live to see it. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio for October the 5th, 2008. Fast Forward Radio is part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. This show is an audio production of the Speculus weblog. You can find us online at www.speculus.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T. Or you can go straight to the blog by typing www.blog.speculus.com. The Speculus and Fast Forward Radio are all about the future, and we offer a positive view of the future that you're not likely to get through other media. We don't have our eyes closed to the problems, we have our eyes open to the possibilities. Michael, are you there?
I am.
Okay.
I am, and I've got audio.
Good, good. Are you hearing Phil at all?
Phil who? No, sorry, I'm not hearing him one whit.
Can you hear me
all
now?
All right. Yeah, we can hear you now.
I can
Phil.
Hear you now.
Man, I was given my whole thing. I was the live to see it and everything. And all of a sudden I hear Stephen's voice, and I'm like, dude, you're interrupting me. I'm talking. And
you know, that's mighty rude, huh?
It became evident that there was a glitch, so sorry about that. Anyway, this is, I assume you already said that what the show is and what we're doing. Catch me up, Stephen. Where are we?
That's right. This is the first anniversary of us doing this. We've been doing this now a year on Blog Talk Radio, and so this is kind of a retrospective show in a way. But as always, though, we're going to be focused on the future as well. So,
well, we got a lot of great stuff we can talk about. We do definitely want to take a look back at some of the fun shows we've had over the past year. It's been great. We've done this will make 50.
And we just lost Phil again. This is great.
He's got to stop calling in on that mythical telephone. He's got to use a real phone.
I guess so. Anyway, you know what would be fun? Since we're experiencing the glitch right now, I'm going to go ahead and play an excerpt from the very first show we ever did. Now, this is not even from a year ago, Mike. This is from, 5 years ago, or well, it was from 2005, so it's from way back when. And what makes it hilarious is how scripted we thought we had to be. You know, we were afraid that if we didn't have like every word scripted out, we wouldn't have anything to say. And so that sort of created it's a very stilted type show. And so I'm glad we stuck with it and we kept working to get through it and have some, and have a better show. But anyway, here is an excerpt from the very first Fast Forward Radio we ever did.
Hello, I'm Stephen Gordon. As you mentioned, Phil, we've got a very special show in which we'll examine some major changes taking place in the world right now.
That's right, Stephen. Think of this as our little guided tour of the future.
And not only are these topics interesting in and of themselves, this show will serve as a kind of previews of coming attractions for some of our upcoming programs. So let's not waste any time.
Man, and it went on an hour like that, Michael. So, I mean, it was something.
Well,
but
I've never heard that before because it's clearly not up on it's not up on iTunes. It's not up on Fast Forward Radio. But let me just say that Phil sounds sort of the same. You sound like, very young and DJ-ish.
Yeah. Let's see if this is Phil calling in on another line. Phil, is that you?
That is me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. So.
Okay,
good.
I'm paying money for this call, so this one better work. That's all I have to say. This better be the one that actually kicks in for us. Now, actually, Michael, at the time we did that first show, Steven still looked like his Facebook picture.
The ensuing years that I work, you know, I now have 4 kids, and I tell you, it's aging me, man. It's aging me.
time travel is good. It turns out it's useful.
I'm really, really counting on this life extension business to kick in, and soon, you know.
Well, one of the things that's interesting about when you listen to that first show, actually the sound quality is really good, and we had a lot of technical problems, but one technical problem we didn't have was nobody could be dropped off the show or any of these phone call problems, because we weren't really we were talking to each other on the phone, but we were actually making individual MP3 recordings, and then I would put mine up on the web, you would download mine and put the two together to make a show. And what was the time commitment for you, Stephen, to make an episode of Fast Forward Radio back in those days?
8 hours. I mean,
eight
I swear.
Hours.
It was. I mean, because I thought it was necessary to take every and ah out, and, you know, that was just incredible. And it was so polished that it sounded like it was fake, and it was, you know, too polished. So
how long ago was that?
Well, 2005.
About May of 2005, so.
Right.
3.5 years ago.
Yeah.
When we did our very first Fast Forward Radio, and then in the ensuing, 2.5 years, we probably put out another, I'm going to say, 25 installments of the program.
That's about
using
right.
Pretty much that same methodology. Most of those are now lost to time, unfortunately, because we used various podcasting services, or we did them ad hoc, and I don't think that we can get to a lot of those, including, I was just looking for today, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe we have this archive someplace, I could not find our interview with Aubrey de Grey, which is a shame if we've lost that, but I don't think we've got that anymore.
Well, I'm thinking it's on a hard drive in this house somewhere, and I just need to get around to digging it up, but yeah, I mean, we had some good shows even before we came to Blog Talk Radio, but since then, by coming to Blog Talk Radio and doing it every week, you get where you're a little more comfortable doing it, and I think, frankly, I just think we've gotten a little better. I hope so, and it's been a lot of fun, and just to know that you got a show every week, and I tell you, we put the time in preparing for the show. But then afterwards, there's no, I mean, the show is out there. You don't have to edit it or anything else. So it's made it a different show.
It's a big difference, although there's still a time commitment, because you work hard putting a meticulous set of show notes together every week. And I just want to say how much I appreciate that, because we have this nice archive of every show, not just the fact that Blog Talk Radio is recording the MP3s. And I've actually got all mine, it gets published to iTunes, and I've got all mine on my iPod. I don't listen to them, by and large, much, but they're all there, so I know we'll never lose any of these. Then in addition to the audio, we've got a nice record of what was said, and when we refer to links, you've got all those links in there, and it's just, you know, looking back, it's a nice record of everything we've done over the past year.
Sally in the chat room's asking, did you guys have internet back then? Just barely, you know, so.
That's like that scene in Mars Attacks where the kid asks his grandma, was she scared when they invented trains? How old do you think I am, kid? But that was long enough ago, we didn't even call it a podcast. We didn't even have that terminology at that time. We just called it our internet radio show or something when we started. But
we didn't learn it was a podcast until, like, I don't know, 6 months into doing it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's what we're doing.
We were doing
okay.
A podcast. We just didn't know. It's like those early bloggers who didn't know they were blogging, right? Same kind of idea. We just thought
they were publishing an online journal, but
yeah, exactly. We
found out it was a blog.
So we got a lot of ground to cover. How would you like to start? You want to start off by venturing down memory lane? Do we want to continue our discussion of Better All the Time? I'd like to end this tonight talking a little bit about where we hope to take the program over the next few years. But maybe we'll start off by reviewing some of what we've done and maybe throw in a little bit of our good news discussion. I just want to say, I don't know if you've given the number out, Stephen, but this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're having a one-year anniversary celebration of this show on Blog Talk Radio this evening. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can join us in the on-live chat or call us at 347-215-8972. So, looking back, what are our highlights? What are the moments that stand out in your mind, Stephen, as you reflect on a year of doing weekly programs?
I don't know if it's just me hating the fact that I was not a part of the show, but I think one of the highlights was the show I missed, which was when you had Robert Zubrin on the show. And I tell you, just a fascinating guest. He was talking about flex fuel and how important that is. And, you know, after that show, I gained a much bigger interest in energy, and I've been blogging on that steadily at The Speculist ever since.
Well,
looks like we have a caller.
Oh, well, bring him on.
All right. And now we don't. See, now, when you're a caller, you got to wait for us to actually get to you. There's
you
no...
got to give us a minute. It takes,
yeah.
I was just about to say, there's a, the time that we, when we had Zubrin on, that was the one show where I ran the soundboard. And I have a great deal of respect for what you do running that, Stephen, I have to say, because we actually had him sitting on hold for about, I don't know, it probably wasn't that long, 4 or 5 minutes. I felt like it must have been an eternity. It was so embarrassing, just because, like, the screen didn't refresh and it didn't show that the call was up there. So we brought him on a little bit late onto the show because of either software glitch or maybe operator error. I don't know. These things get lost to the sands of time. But what a great program that was. Talking about his ideas about flex fuels, why flex fuel vehicles are a huge kind of bridging technology for us, getting us from kind of the current method of how we power vehicles to where we want to go next. Now, one of the things that was interesting about that show, too, talk about we always seem to run out of time. We actually give ourselves a 90-minute slot on Blog Talk Radio, so with the thought that we'll probably talk for an hour out of that time. When we had Dr. Zubrin on, I was hoping that we would spend about 20 minutes talking about flex fuels and then the rest of it talking about the fact that he's the founder of the Mars Society and he's written interesting books on going to Mars on the cheap and all that kind of thing, and never got around to any of that. So we're hoping eventually maybe we'll have him back at some point and we'll talk about that a little bit further.
You know, and I mean, there's so many things that we could have talked about with him. He, back during the 70s, invented a three-person chessboard. I mean, the guy's just a brilliant, interesting guy, and I mean, we could have talked any number of things with Robert Zubrin. But I mean, we've been blessed with other great guests as well.
Let's talk about one who was on the night. One of the nights I missed, you and PJ Manning was our co-host that evening. Talked with Ben Goertzel, and I thought that was a really interesting discussion. In fact, I was mentioning before the show started that one of the things I would like to have done, but the files were too big and I couldn't find a good way to manage them, was to take a few snippets from some of these earlier shows and just play those back. And I had a little sound clip of Ben talking about his kind of unique ideas for how to get to artificial intelligence, a little bit different from what others were talking about. What are your recollections of that interview?
Let's see if I can remember it, Phil. I mean, he was talking about artificial intelligence not only as a function of like computers and things, but also human upgrade through hybrids, basically humans and computers. Or am I remembering it wrong? It's been a while since that show.
I think we got to that later in the program. Offhand, we were talking about what the research they're doing at Novamente, his company, and the thing that really got my attention was they're taking a kind of a non-traditional, if one could use the word traditional to talk about this, a kind of a unconventional, let's put it that way, approach to achieving general artificial intelligence, which is that their view is that eventually we'll have the neuroscience that will enable us to create computer programs that will operate like the human brain, but that we don't really understand enough about that yet. And so that the correct way to get to artificial intelligence from where we are is actually to build it through what we know about computer programming. And to take computer software which is built in an evolutionary way and to evolve intelligent systems that way.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. And that, and of course, what you would end up with might be very different, a different sort of intelligence than our own, since we're not modeling it after the human brain necessarily. You're just letting it evolve to whatever it, you know, whatever you get, you know.
Exactly. So we could end up with something completely different from what we are, in terms of how it gets to intelligence, but that the intelligence, you know, once you had the intelligent being programmed in, you would have an entity there that we could communicate with and that would operate on an intelligent level. But yeah, you would have to think that its basic functions would be different from ours. It's, you know, what has led it to become intelligent would be so different from us that you're looking at a radically new and different thing in the world at that point, which would that's almost kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you know, would it be friendly? Would it be something that could identify with us at all? Those are real concerns, you know.
Yeah, although I think that Ben would suggest that you get to friendliness by focusing on certain outcomes in behavior and certain parameters that are leading to intelligence, even if those don't map exactly to what we have in human neuroscience. So. It sounds scary to us, but maybe it's because we're not as tied into the research. I see in the chat room that Sally asks if she thinks there's a chance of getting Ray Kurzweil or Eric Drexler on the program. Actually, I have a verbal commitment from Ray Kurzweil to be on the show. He had talked about doing it in conjunction with the release of the film version of The Singularity Is Near, which I haven't heard too much about that. Stephen, have you heard anything about that lately? It seems like that's...
Not at all. I haven't, and I try to keep up with that. He is... I don't even know if it's been filmed or what. What's the status on that?
Yeah, I don't know either. I know that they had started. I know that they were at least in pre-production or they were filming some of the documentary pieces. My understanding is that the movie switches back and forth between being a documentary on the singularity and telling a story about an artificial intelligence who is Ramona, which is Kurzweil's...
Alter ego,
alter ego, in a court case to become recognized as an actual human being. So it was these two stories, these two threads. And I'm pretty sure that they did a lot of the filming of the documentary piece. As far as the fictional piece, I don't know if, you know, I haven't heard anything about it in quite some time.
So, well, I mean, that's definitely something I want to us to push for and see if we can get. Ray would be a huge guest for this show, and we would love to have him.
We would absolutely love to have him. If you're by any chance listening, Ray, you're
too.
Welcome anytime.
Yeah.
Anytime on the program.
Absolutely.
And we've hit that first break point. I know I've just said it, but I'm going to say it again. This is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're talking about our first anniversary on Blog Talk Radio, and we'll be talking a little bit about good news and talking a little bit about where we intend to take this program in the future. If you'd like to join that discussion, we're talking about that in our online chat, or you can call us at 347-215-8972. If you called earlier, try calling back. You know, we'll take your call.
Did you see the guy that crossed the English Channel with that Batman-type wing? The jet-powered guy, the jetpack guy.
I saw a headline about that, but I haven't read about it. He's the same. He's, I believe, from Switzerland. Is that right?
That's right. He's sometimes called Fusion Man. I will put in the show notes. I'm going to put the YouTube video of this guy. It's incredible. He crossed the English Channel. That was about a week ago. And he dropped out of an airplane over France and hit those jets, and he's wearing a wing, and he shot all the way across the English Channel. So I guess this goes along with our theory that one day we'll all be Batman. So
yeah that is almost beyond Batman, right? Because I don't even think Batman generally doesn't wear a jetpack. Right. In the movie,
yeah, these are
doing
jets
a lot of,
that are,
hang gliding, right? Kind of base jumping stuff. Even that seems to be kind of an extension from what he did in the comics. This is like that movie, The Rocketeer, right? The
yeah.
Guy who gets flying all over the place with a rocket on his back.
That's right.
One step beyond Batman. I think we're heading in a Superman kind of a direction at that point.
Yeah. And it shows that he obviously had some. He believed in this technology. I mean, you don't fly over the English Channel if you think you're going to go into the drink. You know, if you feel like you're going to have to bail out and then land in the ocean, you might be there a while, and that could have been very dangerous. So, obviously, he had confidence in his technology there.
Well, I think he's done a number of these demonstration flights, and I've seen video. There's video on YouTube of this guy in action. So I figure at some point somebody must have calculated, hey, you know, the distances you're flying in some of these demo flights is long enough that you could fly over a body of water like, say, the English Channel, and that would get us some publicity now, wouldn't it? So that was a pretty clever publicity thing, I think, for them to do to draw some additional attention to the to their company. Looking forward to those jetpacks becoming a readily available commercial product, I think. I think a person could have a lot of fun with those. Looks like Michael has an update on the Kurzweil movie. What have you found out there, Michael? Looks like you found the website and you've got a release date.
It's expected out in early 2009. And if you go to that website, it's going to say, it's actually interesting the way they describe the film. You have an A line and a B line. The A line is sort of an old, barred, factual documentary appearing. Let's get a bunch of people who know crap about the future and have them talk about it, including a very nice picture of Bobby DeGray right in the middle. And then the B line, which is sort of the interviewed or intertwined story of Ramona and how Ramona has done what she's done and what Ramona will do in the future, coached by Tony Robbins. So very exciting, teaser there.
Last I heard, also, she would be represented in court by Alan Dershowitz. I don't know if the website mentions anything about that.
That is what it says. She combats an attack of self-replicating nanobots, also known as gray goo, and hires Alan Dershowitz to press for her legal rights as a person.
So we have a caller.
All right. Well, bring him on.
Okay. Caller, welcome to Fast Forward Radio.
Hello, guys.
Hey, PJ. How are you?
PJ.
All right. I wanted to wish you guys a happy anniversary.
Thanks.
PJ Manny, not only I think our most frequent guest on the program, but also one of our occasional co-hosts on the show as well. So thanks for being a part of the show over the last year. Stephen and I were just talking about, before the broadcast started, we were talking about favorite moments. We were going through kind of best of, worst of kind of lists, and we both said favorite guests. There were a couple, three names, but for both of our lists, you were right at the top of the list, PJ.
Oh, you guys are so sweet. I had such a ball. It's a lot of fun. Hey, where else do I get to talk about this kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's right. You got to have geek friends to talk about geek stuff. I mean,
yeah,
that's the way it is.
Totally, totally. And I value my geek friends.
You know, because life can't just all be normal life. You need some people like us that you can, you can phone in. And I believe one of the questions I put to you once was, why are and it made sense in context, I want to say, for people who
uh-oh.
But I believe the question I asked you was, why do geeks tend to be such nerds? And you actually had a fantastic answer to that question. And I think, and anybody that you can spring a question like that on and who has an answer to it is just
What I worry about is when someone said, I always worry when someone says, gosh, that was a great thing you said. What was it again? I have no clue. I live in the moment.
Well, you will note that I remember the question, not so much your answer.
No, not the answer, right? Touche.
Just remember it was brilliant.
We will link to the answer. So PJ, do you have any particular favorite moments from the past year that you'd care to relate, or any thoughts on what you think we should, any directions you think we should be taking this in the year to come?
Oh, golly. I think that I agree that I thought Ben Groeschel's conversation was very interesting. That was he's already a friend, and I already talked to him, certainly within a social and also research capacity, but it was great fun to be able to talk to him in an official capacity as well. That was great. Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think you guys do a wonderful job. I think it's a fun show, and you give an awful lot of very valuable information that you can't get other places, especially within this kind of medium.
Well, that's, you know, that's what we're trying to do. I mean, the thought increasingly is that there is a whole set of trends of things that are happening in the world that just kind of get overlooked, that naturally we have to focus on solving problems and we have to focus on dangers and risks that the world presents, but that in dealing with those, we might lose sight of the fact that there are tremendously good things happening, and there's a potential for even better things if we can get our head around those things and focus on them a little bit. So it's fun to be able to do this, and we certainly look forward to the next year. I'll tell you a couple of things that come to mind in addition to having you as our official Hollywood correspondent reporting on the Oscars, which was
that was awesome. Wonderful, silly fun.
But of three panel discussion programs we've done, you were actually on, I think, two of the panels. We did a panel discussion on transhumanism, and you were a panelist on that, and we did a panel discussion on the future of fit versus the future of fat, and you were a panelist on that. How did you like the panel discussion format? Do you think we should do more of those? Do you think that's an effective thing to do?
I think it was very interesting because you got, especially with that latter one, you had we were three very different people coming from very different backgrounds. You know, Brian Wang has such an encyclopedic knowledge of, well,
everything.
I mean, he's extraordinary.
Yeah.
And your friend Sean, that was his name, correct?
Yes.
Was incredibly obviously knowledgeable in his own field. So, yeah, I thought that was actually very effective. Did your listeners agree?
You know, we got a lot of good responses on both of all three of the panel discussion programs that we've done. And they're certainly fun for us to do. I have a good time with them. Stephen, any thoughts on the panel shows versus individual guests?
Well, you know, the only downside of a panel is that you might have these great guys like Sean that we've never had on the show otherwise, that we could fill a couple of shows just visiting with him. But the good side of it is that you have the interaction. You have immediate feedback from somebody else. You know that, you know, if I was talking to Sean and he brings up a point, you go, well, that's interesting. I wonder what PJ would have to say about that. Well, she's there on the show. You know, so I guess the upside is that you have the feedback of those people right then, right there. I mean, the immediacy of it. But you know, if you've got some great guests, you might want to have them on separately as well at another time. So I guess just mix it up, I guess, is the way to go.
Yeah.
It's all about balance.
Yeah.
It's all about balance. There you go. I mean, that's the same answer we had on the fitness and fatness show, right?
It's all about balance.
It's all about balance. Sometimes we have guests, sometimes we don't have guests. Well, another thing that Stephen and I have observed, sometimes, you know, we'll have a guest on and we'll talk to the guest for the whole show, and we talked about Ben, and we talked about Zubrin. You know, some of the others would be, we had
Tobias Buchel.
Tobias, of course, we've had him on a couple of times, another one of our favorite guests. And I should note that I got an email from him. He's having a difficult time calling in. He tried to call in, and Tobias, if you're listening, we appreciate you trying. And if you want to give it another shot, we hope to talk to you, but otherwise we appreciate you wanting to be part of this tonight. I was having some trouble calling in too, so I understand the difficulty. We had Dr. Jing Sui, who is a cancer researcher working on a really unique and innovative approach to treating cancer. That was that was kind of an important program we did, and you contrast that with somebody like, say, Jim Elvich, not to say he's not important, but just a very different topic. The guy who we spent an hour talking about the theory that the world is actually a computer program, and that things like UFOs and Bigfoot are evidence of the fact that the world is a computer program. So, you know, we anywhere from the very serious, very topical, very timely kind of stuff to the kind of way out, very fun kind of topics. We're able to cover all of those with
with individual guests, and then you know, been able to do quite a few programs where it's just been ourselves and the folks in the chat room and whoever occasionally wants to call in talking about a particular topic. So we would talk about memes or long shot futures or Better All the Time, for example.
That's right.
So it's been a nice mix, and I think we've maintained that balance. If we've not been balanced lately, it's probably that we haven't had many of those hour long interview type shows. So we'll probably want to get a few more of those back in. Taking your advice, PJ, to keep the format balanced.
All right.
Well, I have to say I think it was your interview with Zugrin, which was so fantastic. I've actually never forgotten some of the things he said on that show, especially his comments about the flex fuel cars, and how actually economically viable it is to create flex fuel cars. That still blew my mind that it's something we weren't doing, that it was available to us, and we were throwing that opportunity away.
Yep. Apparently, you can convert you can take a normal car on the assembly line, and for about another $150, $200 tops, you can turn it into a flex fuel car. And then it runs on gasoline, ethanol, or methanol, or any mixture of the three. And
PJ, I don't know if you've been tracking last few weeks, but one of the things we're doing is we're offering the presidential campaign that has the most speculist-friendly fast forward radio friendly content, we're gonna award them a fast forward radio coffee mug. So
which is very important to them, we just know.
Well,
absolutely, but look, it's actually an unbelievably important topic, whether or not they, you know, they're aware of where you guys are going. They should be.
Well, and one of the encouraging signs is I believe it's the McCain campaign that has referred to flex fuels specifically. I have to go back in my notes and see if, because I think it was the Obama campaign who talked about plug-in hybrids, another one of our favorites by name, and I think it was McCain who talked about flex fuels by name. So we've been keeping track of this, hoping to see more and more of that kind of content. It seems like earlier on, around the time of the conventions, we were getting more speculative type material out of these folks. Lately, we've had a lot of financial worries. We've had, you know, this crisis and that crisis, and I think as we get closer to the election, there's a lot more what do they call it? I don't want to say negative campaigning. They call it the opposition research-based campaigning as they kind of go at each other. And I don't think we're getting as much of the, unfortunately, not getting as much of the speculist-friendly content as we were. But one of the things we said was if either one of them would just use the phrase space elevator at any point, they'd probably clinch the mug right there. So.
That's right.
There, I think you men will have to dream on. I don't think that'll be happening anytime soon, unless the asteroid is coming. I don't think it's happening anytime soon.
What about utility fog? Wouldn't it be awesome if Obama just spent about, like, you know, a minute just explaining why utility fog would be a really helpful thing? You know, it's or McCain, either one. But
well, our dress is our favorite sci-fi characters for Halloween. You know, any of these things would clinch the mug.
There are so many ways to win, guys.
Wait a second. So what I'm hearing here now is Obama as Commander Worf. I mean, what are we talking about?
any of these, you know, any character will do. We, you know, we're going to be open to whatever they want to do.
Well, Colonel Ty from Battlestar Galactica. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, definitely.
That website where they've got the picture of Ty. Commander Roslin, and it looks just like McCain and Palin. I mean, physically, these two it really looks like that's who's running. It's really kind of funny.
Very true. Interestingly, I think New Scientist magazine this week just did a quick little interview with, I think it was like 12 of writers, scientists, Nobel Prize winners, etc. What would you expect to find, what would you hope that whoever the new administration is would do as their first positive step towards science? And some of the answers were what was tragic is that it didn't exist already. Like, you know, we've lost our presidential science advisor, and one of them said, well, we should get them back, and it should be a member of the cabinet. You know, another one was having a real ethics committee, not an ethics committee that's politically loaded. All these things where you sort of went, wow, yeah, we don't have that. Damn. It was kind of heartbreaking when you read the list. It seemed like the basics. Good science education in America, you know, an emphasis on that.
I think it would be a fine idea to have almost a GI Bill set aside for people who want to study, basically pay for the education of someone who wants to become an engineer or
a scientist. Yeah.
Or a scientist of some sort, you know. I mean, we just don't have enough of that in this country. Basic research is kind of, we're losing it to other countries.
And that was something we credited the Obama campaign with wanting to put a good deal of funding towards basic research, kind of going back on that track. And both campaigns actually had, I think, some really strong initiatives towards improving education. So, PJ, if you could send us a link to that story you were talking about, we'd like to refer to that in the show notes. That sounds...
I'm looking as we speak.
Very interesting, albeit a little depressing. Never fear, because the world is, in fact, getting better all the time, as we demonstrated in our new edition of Better All the Time that was up on the blog this week. I think we had a good news story about science education. Maybe it was two or three of those bats back. Do you remember what I'm talking about by any chance, Stephen?
Help me out, Phil. Give me a little more detail.
I'm stalling. See, I say that to you while I look around to see if I can find it. So.
Okay. Well, you do that. In the chat room, Sally was talking about how, she was talking about the space elevator and how, when she read about it in the 70s, the Fountains of Paradise novel, that it was the conception was a tall, heavy, you know, a heavy tower type, you know, made of metal type thing.
Right.
Obviously. Our conception of what it would be has changed a lot since then.
Well, I think, you know, when you conceive it as an elevator, I almost see it just as kind of this cable going up. Although there might, I don't know, would the, one of the questions that I started asking myself as I was writing about it today is, would there be more infrastructure around that cable? Would it actually be a cable with some kind of tower around it? Would it just be a cable that the car climbs up? I don't know. I'm not sure.
They're talking now, it's just a carbon nanotube ribbon that's, you know, thinner than a piece of paper, really, but you know, maybe 3 or 4 feet wide that the climber climbs up.
Okay, so. Mr. Knows a lot about space elevator. Try this question on for size, because I got thinking about this one, too. How do you get the initial hookup? Do we dangle it down? Do we control of it? Do we hook to a rocket and take it up, or
What you do, you know, what I'm hearing is the latest idea is that you launch a huge rocket with just the thinnest of threads that you lower down, and then you have climbers, tiny little climbers that climb up, taking additional threads and as they go, and basically weaving the ribbon from a single thread that hangs down.
So, but at some point you got a huge spool of it up in the satellite, and you're propelling that back down to the Earth. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Initially? Yeah.
That's right.
Either way, it's hard to get your head around how it gets started, because then something Earthside is going to have to catch that ribbon, that first thread, and then it all makes sense, right? From there, you just build and build and build on the thread. But initially making that happen is the challenging part. Okay, I found it. It was in Better All the Time from just a few weeks ago. Which edition was this? Now that I've said that, I have to go back up to the top and look. This was Better All the Time number 35. And here was the headline. Record numbers of students sign up for advanced math and science courses. Nearly 60% more students will be taking more challenging math and science courses at high schools in 6 states this fall, thanks to the National Math and Science Initiative, a nationwide effort to improve American achievement and competitiveness. And I won't read the whole thing, but it was a nice turn of events on a program that had probably fallen off a little bit in recent years, and they've turned it around a little bit, and they're setting some pretty ambitious goals for getting more and more kids into those kinds of programs. So
there's some good news for you, PJ. Okay.
Sorry, my mic was off.
sorry.
I was trying to spare you guys. My son cracked from his clarinet.
Okay.
Well, there it is, education. You see, we got kids studying music. We got kids studying math, science. It's great. That's good stuff. We'd love to have a recording of that on the program sometime, PJ. So,
you know, let him practice a little more.
Okay. I'll take your word for it on that. Actually, my daughter plays clarinet, and I want to find the right verb here. Experienced her practice over the years, and definitely. How old's your son?
12.
And how long have you been playing clarinet?
Let's see. This will be his third year.
Okay, so yeah, he's coming along, I would bet. But
yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
clarinet's kind of like a violin in that it's a beautiful instrument in the hands of somebody who knows how to play it. But if not, a violin and a clarinet can really sound bad if in the hands of somebody who doesn't know how to play it. So the process of becoming an accomplished player can be painful for those around.
Well, especially in the earliest stages. I mean, it is like a violin in that if, like, just any old person takes the bow to a violin and starts sawing on the strings, you get that just screech, right? And if a normal human being who hasn't learned how to do it blows into a clarinet, you probably get nothing, right? But if you get any sound at all, it's not going to be pleasant, that's for sure. It's going to be a horrible squeaking sensation. So.
Yeah, we're getting to pleasant, but we haven't reached Benny Goodman yet.
Oh, okay, working towards Benny Goodman. Well, you know, when we've approached that stage, let us know.
I sure will.
We'll look forward to having him on the. Actually, when he starts uploading music, right, Stephen, we can use him as one of our intro or outros. One of these.
That's right. Absolutely.
So now we've got something to look forward to for an upcoming future edition of Fast Out Radio. So, thanks for providing that for us, PJ.
Thank you so much.
Now, I want to say that this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're reviewing our first year of being on Blog Talk Radio. And if you'd like to join our discussion, you can give us a call 347-215-8972 or join us in the online chat. So I want to move on a little bit since we're rounding out towards our kind of closing out period. On the new Better All the Time I did this week, Stephen, I don't know if you had a chance to read that one. I just put it up today.
Yeah, I've read it, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, good man. Because, I know you've noticed that sometimes when you put something up on the blog, I don't comment until like a day or two later. Doesn't mean I didn't read it initially, but sometimes I have to, I have to let it process and think about exactly, what do I have to say to Stephen on this important topic. But the last story is kind of the one that I think puts the Fast Forward Radio and the Speculist into context. And the headline for the last story was, "Against All the Odds, the World is Becoming a Happier Place." And the article starts out like this. He says, or she, whoever wrote this, "Despite deepening economic gloom and impending climatic destruction, the world is becoming a happier place, according to an analysis of a quarter of a century of data on well-being from 45 countries around the globe. The finding goes against the received wisdom that a country's economic advances do not translate into increased wellbeing among its citizens." I'm not sure what that means. Anyway, the researchers who compiled the data believe increasing levels of happiness were not picked up until now because studies have tended to focus on rich countries where increases in wealth make little difference to their citizens' satisfaction with life. So really interesting. Two things that really caught my attention about this. One is that this goes hand in hand even with the story that OK David Ray pointed out to us, in which we included in this week's edition of Better All the Time, about increased wireless phone usage in the developing world. Suddenly in Africa and parts of Asia, everyone's got a mobile phone. Well, that has to do with economic development. It has to do with technological development. And as those benefits are achieved in those countries, we're actually seeing greater levels of happiness in the world, something that conventional wisdom, and this is the other part that really got my attention, conventional wisdom said wouldn't happen. Conventional wisdom is that your material happiness doesn't, your actual happiness doesn't increase with the amount of material well-being that you have. And in fact, as I was reading through the story, they talk about the different levels of needs that people have to have met. You think about the Maslow hierarchy, which
right.
Our friend Harvey has done a couple of videos on that, actually, interesting stuff. And the expectation was that people's happiness increases tremendously once you start meeting the basic food, shelter, clothing, that kind of stuff. But that when you get beyond that point, there's not an increase in happiness, and that people are not taking that next step into the, what is that top level of the Maslow hierarchy?
Self-actualization, I believe.
Self-actualization, right. We, you know, even if we're working on that here in the developed world with all our economic advantages, we're not actually necessarily achieving any happiness due to that.
Right.
At least that was the thinking. But now this research kind of flies in the face of that thinking, and we're finding people getting happier really throughout the world. But in the countries that were studied, this is an interesting statistic, and I just love this. From the years 1981 to 2007, happiness overall increased, and the average percentage of people saying they were very happy rose by 7%. So we don't think that the world is becoming a happier place. Certainly, if you watch the news, you wouldn't expect that the world is becoming a happier place. But if you actually ask people, it turns out that the number of people who claim happiness as a feature of their lives is increasing. And it seems to be happening both in the developing world and in our part of the world, where we've developed, right, already, where we've already supposedly got the advantages. So it's an interesting take on, you know, what people expect and what's actually happening.
I wonder if it's a function of think of it this way. A fairly well-to-do person here in the United States, if you ask them, how much happier would you be next year if you earned $5,000 more than, say, this year? The answer, if they answer truthfully, well, not very much. That $5,000 additional would not affect my happiness all that much.
Although that's going to depend greatly on what they're currently making.
Yeah, exactly.
If they're currently making $5,000 and you offer them $5,000, then they're going to say, yeah, boy. Are you kidding?
Yeah, that was my point. If you go to someplace in the developing world and somebody's making $10,000 a year, and you ask them that question, well, a heck of a lot happier with an additional $5,000. So maybe that's it. And you see things like you mentioned in the Better All the Time this week, Phil, that wherever the cell phone has been adopted in developing countries, then there's subsequent to that, there's an economic boom. And I can see how, if you're taking people that are destitute and they're now jobs and they're now opportunities, that's going to increase happiness all over the world. So that's, I think it's all connected there.
Absolutely. And it's not to say that there aren't a whole lot of problems associated with economic development and technological development, and there are downsides to all of these things as well. But that was something that I had personally observed working in the Eastern Bloc and in Southeast Asia in the 90s, as we were bringing these new mobile phone companies online in these markets where there was fixed telephony, but it was not widely available, and suddenly phone service is widely available to a lot of people. And I'm not ready to say it's an absolute cause and effect. I think it, to a certain extent, it's an enabler, but probably there had to be some economic change going on to catalyze wireless telephony taking off. So I'm not saying it's a magic wand, right? It's not like you can go into a poor and destitute area, start handing out phones, and that's automatically going to cause an economic boom. But it's definitely correlated with that. It's definitely
right.
a piece of the puzzle. And the real benefit that you see is people have with technology, with economic development, they have more choices than they did before. They're able to make choices for their lives that they weren't able to make prior to the introduction of that technology or achieving that particular economic level. And I think that's really what we talk about on Fast Forward Radio. I think that if I were to to try to crystallize everything we do down to one thing, it's probably that. It's that technology is freeing us. It's enabling us to have greater choices than we had in the past. And if you combine technology with economic development, you have a picture of humanity becoming more free and more capable. And that's what we're really excited about. When I talk about if you're not excited about the future, you're not paying attention, those are the things I'm talking about. I'm talking about those kinds of changes that are really making life substantially different for people than it has been in the past.
That's right. And if you're living in a situation in a developing country or an undeveloped country where you don't know where your next meal is coming from, I mean, it's not a lot of less, you know. There's not an opportunity for to build a happy life in that kind of situation. So obviously, you got to move past that. And of course, you know, as we well know here I think still we're the wealthiest country in the world. There's plenty of opportunities to be unhappy even here. But you know, once the basic needs are met, there's a great chance of being happy as well. So I think having a good sense of humor is part of it as well.
Absolutely. Now, Michael, tell us what's going on in the chat room. We've taken a turn off into from happiness to Buddhist theology. What's going on there?
Well, the Buddhist leap was actually a short one. Harvey brought out that a literary reference to the Dalai Lama has authored a book called The Art of Happiness, and in that partly claims that to be happy, first you have to accept the realization that life is suffering, and that to be alive includes suffering. And then from there we deviated into a Marxist revolution. I didn't quite follow the leap there.
So we got the Marxist revolution going on. Well, sometimes I toy with Marxist ideas a little bit, not in the political mainstream political way. I'm not, you know, coming out of the closet as a red. Don't worry, Stephen. Nothing like that. But I actually believe that.
Thank God.
I actually believe that. I've secretly been a communist all this time. You never would have guessed, would you? I believe that a lot of the really attractive sounding ideas that you find in Marxist ideology, because there's no question that there are attractive sounding ideas in there. You know, so much of the world would not have been quick to adopt this memeplex, if you will, if there hadn't been some really good sounding stuff in there. I remember once years ago reading something. I think it was maybe a George Will column, and he was talking about the appeal of this stuff. He said, if you read it line by line, the Soviet Union's constitution sounds better than ours, right? Just in terms of what it's offering the world. But I think that some of the tropes, some of the basic ideas that you find there actually are things that we're seeing happen now, not via revolution and not via government, but via technology. And to me, the greatest example of this is the Glenn Reynolds' Army of Davids concept, where we've seen the idea of the means of production have been truly handed down to the workers. The workers have taken control of the means of production in so many different ways, and that, you know, is a Marxist trope, but it's actually been achieved through technology and through kind of a libertarian distribution of technology. So not as a political remedy, but definitely the ideas are there, and I think the means of getting to some of those good things are definitely there, although we find them maybe in a different way than we would have expected.
Well, you know, both Adam Smith and Marx were approaching the same problem. How do you maximize happiness for the most people? Well, they came up with very different solutions, and they both were tried out in the 20th century. And it's my contention that capitalism won out. But you know, and through capitalism, maybe we'll end up seeing some of the dreams of the communists come true as well. So.
Yeah, that's what I think the ironic thing is, that probably eventually capitalism gets us to Marx's worker paradise. That's the great amazing irony of of history, and we won't even think it's all that astounding when it happens, because we never are all that astounded by the future once it shows up. People will take the space elevator for granted once it gets here. But I want to go back to the Dalai Lama, because I read The Art of Happiness, and one of the things that the Dalai Lama says is that you really need to integrate this Buddhist idea of suffering. The notion of accepting life as suffering sounds, and PJ, if you're still with us, you can correct me if I misstate any Buddhist ideas here, because I think you're probably a lot more familiar with them than I am. But the Buddhist idea of suffering is not enjoying suffering. It's not being a masochist, or it's not taking on a woe is me or a self-pitying kind of thing, or a negative focus on life, because obviously there are a few people with more of a positive outlook on the world than the Dalai Lama has. But it is about recognizing that essential shortcoming of existence, that essential lack in our existence to get us where we want to be. So I think in a lot of ways there's a parallel between what the Dalai Lama would describe as the imperative to recognize human suffering and what we talk about when we talk about the human imperative and the ideas that we describe in the Speculist Manifesto. Now, I'm not saying that the Dalai Lama is in favor, that he's some kind of techno-progressive, or that he would agree that technology is the solution to these problems. But I actually think
we're
talking about...
He is a techno-progressive. You do know that, don't you?
I didn't know that.
He himself has said that if he wasn't the Dalai Lama, he'd be an engineer.
There you go. Cool. The Dalai Lama is a geek. How about that?
The Dalai Lama is a geek. He actually, his favorite hobby from the youngest age was taking apart machines and putting them back together again. He actually, from what I gather, that was his favorite thing to do. He loves machines. He loves technology. And he's also the first person to say that if science proves some part of Buddhism wrong, then Buddhism must change.
Wow. You don't hear that from a lot of major religious leaders. I mean, we don't endorse political
candidates
or religious leaders on this program. But that is a...
We've got another caller, Phil.
That is a departure. Oh, well, bring him on.
Okay. Caller, welcome to Fast Forward Radio.
Hi, guys. This is Matt Dewing. I just wanted to congratulate you on the one-year anniversary of your show.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Matt, we appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much. And I wanted to thank you for the good news story that you provided last week. I don't know if you saw, but that's up on the blog this week as part of our new Better All the Time, and we did acknowledge your role in providing that to us.
Thanks. And, you know, that you were talking about space elevators a bit before, and there was further progress on nanotubes reported this week. And it's for the first time there was fabricated a twisted yarn pattern in a dry state, which is both faster and cheaper. I'll send you that link too.
So they've gotten it to where they're weaving it into yarn now. Is that what you said, Matt?
Yes.
How far does that get us, Matt, in your view, towards the problem of length? Right. I mean, I remember a while back, anyway, they were saying that the whole problem with trying to use carbon nanotubes to make the cable for the space elevator is that right now we're still dealing with extremely short pieces. Now, if we can make yarn, can we start thinking in terms of, you know, whatever it is, 60,000 miles, or are we still quite a ways from that?
It seems that there is progress towards that, because saying that this should enable commercialization for some applications. Actually, the story, the press release I'm looking at isn't very detailed, but it seems like this technology does lead to longer cables, but I don't think space elevator type stuff quite yet.
Okay, so, you know, we're getting there. Just, I guess, as with the, you know, the two big issues are strength and length, right? They should hire me. I should be the head of marketing for Space Elevator Inc., right? I mean, I've already got it down to a nice little rhyming thing. If we can get the strength and the length, that's basically all we need in order to make a space elevator cable. Well, Matt, thank you for that. We appreciate you calling in, and we appreciate so much. You are one of our absolute true blue chat room participants. We see you there almost every week. Thank you so much for being a part of our program, and we look forward to having you as part of the show in the years to come as well.
Thanks for producing such a great show. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Matt. Bye-bye. All right.
All right.
Great to hear from Matt. And I think actually that takes us right up to the end of our time here, Stephen, unless there was anything else that you wanted to try to get into this evening.
Well, you know, it has been so much fun. I mean, it's never this show has never been a work, has it, Phil? I mean, it doesn't. It's just the sort of thing I enjoy and look forward to doing every week. So I don't
Absolutely.
See us stopping this anytime soon.
No. I was just thinking, you know, there was a time when it was a big, you know, chore for us to get one out, and then suddenly we started doing them once a week, and I don't see us stopping anytime soon. I see us expanding what we do with the program. Maybe we'll at some point go to a full 90-minute show rather than planning on an hour of material. We'll start planning on 90 minutes per week, and of course, if that happens, eventually we'll start slopping over past that time too, I bet, but look to expanding that a little bit. And I say we keep doing this show until the singularity. How's that?
That's right.
You know, after the singularity, we'll reassess.
Then our avatars will do it after that. So,
yeah, well, we'll reassess what the need, you know, what the best thing we can do is at that point. But we'll keep doing this show in some form until then, because we, you know, we need to keep people informed that that's on its way.
That's right. Well, the music this week, Phil, comes to us from Josh Charles, is his name, and the song is Love, Work, and Money, and it's his contention that love, work, and money makes the world go round. So I figure, since we're making no money with this show, and it's not really work, then it must be a labor of love. So we're
it is all about the love.
That's right. So anyway, enjoy the music, and I'll have up show notes probably tomorrow morning.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. We'll look forward to listening to Love, Work, and Money. PJ, Manny, thank you so much for joining us again this evening. We look forward to having you back on again soon.
My pleasure.
And Michael, thanks to you and to all our friends in the chat room.
Brago.
And to everyone listening, we thank you for being a part of Fast Forward Radio, and we look forward to being with you again on the next Fast Forward Radio. Until then, good night.
How many times have I told myself not to enter back in this situation? The money's gone and there's no work in sight. I'm staying right here, I keep on fighting the fight. You know that love, work, and money makes this world go round. What brings you up can also bring you. My woman wants a diamond ring and I got nothing I can use. Well, the odds are stacked against me, and that I can surely see. But you know what, it still don't make no sense.